If you have your Bible, I hope you do. Turn to Matthew chapter 20. We are looking at the book of Matthew. I guess you know that by now. We're walking slowly through a Jew's talking to Jews about a Jew, and that certainly is for all of us, and that's why we're looking at it. And I'm surely glad the Bible can be applied. We're looking now where Jesus healed two blind men, leaving Jericho and heading toward Jerusalem. Things are about to wrap up. In fact, I really tried. I wanted to cover this and what's usually called the triumphal entry, but it's just too much to cover in one night, I believe. And sometimes a break's just not the most convenient thing for us as far as preachers, but we sure do need to mind the Bible and allow the Lord to have His will. But the end is about to come. Things are getting wrapped up. He's getting close to the end. The last week is very close. And before He does that, He has a mind toward people. He has a mind for others. He has a mind for one or two people. Mark 10 covers this, and Luke 18 also deals with this same account. Look in verse 29. And as they departed from Jericho, a great multitude followed Him. They're still following. They're still inquisitive. They're still looking. They still want to know. They still want help. They still want, unless there's a couple of biscuits left, they want to make sure they're close around in case there's something He wants to hand out. They want to stay close. And surely if this man is the Messiah and He sets up the kingdom, they want to be there to reap the benefit. But we find in these first couple of verses, the men who are hurting, the men who are hurting, we find two men here that are blind, who need to be healed. Now, it's a perfect picture. Nothing in the Bible is out of place. We'll do well to remember that. He is getting ready to go into the last week of His life. He is getting ready to be rejected finally and completely and totally. Jews especially are going to turn their backs on Him for the most part as a whole, as a nation. In other words, it's going to be revealed like never before how blind Israel is. Their Messiah comes God's way to God's people and does miracles that can't be explained, and He helps people and He assists people, and they turn away from Him. They reject Him. They were spiritually blind, and right before this takes place, right before all this, just, we could say it like this, seems to fall apart, we find two blind men who need to be healed, who want to be healed, who want to see. Their physical blindness can certainly be applied to the spiritual blindness of Israel and so many people today. It's a perfect picture of that spiritual blindness. They departed from Jericho, and they're heading, as I said, toward Jerusalem. Jericho was a fairly large city at that time. It was about 19 miles northeast of Jerusalem, and they're heading toward Jerusalem. Maybe you remember the city Jericho. It was near that city where they crossed Jordan when they first went into the Promised Land. Remember, that was the first city that they conquered. Remember how they did it? Walked around the walls one time each day and then seven times the seventh day. And the walls fell flat and they went in and conquered the city. It's a place of miracles. Later on, I won't deal with this, just to mention it, Joshua declares a curse on this city. And he says anybody who would rebuild it would be cursed. You can find that in Joshua 6:26. There have been people who have tried. There's been some people who have gotten it started and done fairly well. In fact, like I said, there was a new Jericho in Jesus' day. We'll look at that in just a minute. But they're heading from Jericho, heading toward Jerusalem. And like always, a great multitude is following them. They're still interested. They're looking. Luke says, now there's a contradiction, some people say. It's amazing how people look in the Bible to find contradictions. I tell you one thing that'll help you one thing that will sort of silence them. When they say the Bible's full of contradictions, just hand them the Bible and say, well, will you please show me one? Boy, I'll tell you, I've done that several times, and I have yet to find someone who knows enough about these so-called contradictions that can tell me one. But here's one that some people say, the Bible's in error, the Bible's wrong, there's a contradiction. And the reason is because if we just read in this verse, they're departed from Jericho. And Luke says, as he was come nigh unto Jericho. So clearly, one account says they're leaving, and one account says they're coming. Well, how in the world, how do you decipher that? It's very easy. There were two Jerichos. That Old Testament Jericho still has some ruins there. There was still some structures standing, and it was still that site of the old Jericho there. And you know what they did? They called it Jericho. But on the off scene, out away from that place, a new Jericho had begun. And that new Jericho is what we're talking about here. So it's very easily, if you say you got two Jerichos, you can certainly leave one and arrive at the other. And that's exactly what's happening here. It'll do us well to realize there are no contradictions in the Bible. There's just minds that are limited, and when we see the truth, we'll realize this Bible is true after all. I'm glad we got a Bible we can trust. Look in verse 30. Behold, two blind men sitting by the wayside, when they heard that Jesus passed by, cried out, saying, have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David. Here's the two men who are hurting. Here's the two men who are blind. There were two among many, I promise you. I thought about it again this afternoon. These were not the only blind men around. I know that because of how the Bible talks about blind people. And in that day, the harshness of the sun and the blowing sand and the lack of medical know-how, there were many who had vision problems. There were many who had become blind. And here's two of them. Here's two out of many, and especially, listen, being near Jericho, there's no doubt a large number of people who are blind. And I say that because of what Jericho was then. It literally means a place of healing in that day. Jericho had balsam bushes. And from these balsam bushes, they made medicine. Guess what they used it for? To help vision problems. So I want to ask you a question. If you're having a time with your vision, especially if you're blind, and you hear about a place where people are getting help, do you reckon you'd go there? Sure you would. So would them. And that's what they did. There's many. There's no doubt about it. There were many in that day that were blind around this area. But notice, only two call out. Only two ask for help. That tells me something. There were some people who were blind that had gotten satisfied with it or had given up for any help or didn't believe Jesus could help them or refused to admit their need. I do know this, there were people there who were blind and Jesus walked right by them and they didn't call out, but two did. You want to know why? They were tired of being sightless. They were tired of the condition they were in. Until we get tired of the condition we're in, we probably won't get out. We probably won't get help, especially if that help must come from God. He hears their desperate call. It's a call of faith, no doubt. It's a call of expectation, but it is a desperate call. And they call out in just a minute here. There's two blind men sitting by the way, and when they heard Jesus pass by, cried out, saying, have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David. Now, I'll say this again, another contradiction some have proposed. For Luke and Mark mention only one man. Matthew mentions two. One is Barnabas, we'll see. And then there's another unnamed man that we still don't know his name. We'll meet him in heaven. And I believe that with all my heart. But just because Matthew mentions two and Mark and Luke only mention one, that doesn't mean anybody's lied or contradicted each other. Now, if Mark and Luke said there was only one man, now that would be wrong. But they didn't say that. They mentioned one, and no doubt, perhaps, I don't know if you can say no doubt, perhaps, but perhaps the reason that only one is mentioned by name, Barnabas, is because maybe he was the outspoken of the two. Maybe he was the one that was more well-known. We don't really know why Jesus, why God decided or determined, decreed to only mention one by name. And to be honest, it's just none of our business. It doesn't really matter. But there were two, and one of them was Barnabas. And these men, when they hear about Jesus coming by, they call out. Now, Luke tells us a little bit more about these men. Luke chapter 18, verse 35 said these two men were by the wayside begging. So they not only were blind, but they were begging. That's why I said they're hurting. These men are in a dire strait. These men are in bad condition. These men are hurting. These men are struggling. They sat beside the wayside begging, the only hope they had for some food for the day that has arisen is that somebody give them something, that somebody has mercy on them, that somebody will throw a few coins in or give them a morsel of bread. They have to beg for everything they get because they can't work. There's no way they can do anything being blind, so they are forced to beg. And they call out to the crowd as they come by and beg for food or beg for money. Here's two men who are hurting. And they hear the noise of the crowd. I thought about this sitting beside the wayside. Number one, you got to get there. Perhaps they knew the way enough now where they could stumble by, leave wherever they were sleeping that night, and find their spot to beg. Perhaps they had equipped themselves and trained themselves where they could feel their way there. I do not know. Maybe they had a friend or a family member to help them there. I do not know how they got there, but I know this, it wasn't easy. Just getting there where they could beg wasn't easy, but then you have to listen because you don't know if anybody's around. I wonder how many people snuck by. I wonder how many people knew that Barnabas and his buddies were out there at that same spot again, and they snuck by quietly on the other side because they had to listen to know anybody was around. The reason they cried out usually for money or for help in begging was because they heard somebody passing by, but this time, boy, they know something's different. Now, we've heard several people come by before. We've even seen or heard crowds come by. But here's a crowd we can hear. We can feel it on the ground. There's something going on. And they start asking. Good thing they did. They start asking, what in the world's going on? What has happened? You look in Luke 18, it'll tell you some of these things that Matthew does not mention. I'm not just dreaming this up. Sometimes I do, but this time I'm not. I'll tell you, I'm giving you my opinion. But this is factual. This is the Bible. They hear the noise of the crowd, and they start asking the people around them. They start asking anybody who will listen, what is going on? What is happening? And someone told them, Jesus is passing by. I wonder what they thought that first split second. Jesus, we've heard about Jesus. We've heard about that man, and one of the things I've heard about him is that he has healed blind people, that he has the power to give sight to those who have none. What I have heard about him is he's something special, he's something unique. Whether they knew all the details, we do not know about who he was, his deity, and we don't know about that, but we know this. They had heard that Jesus was able to help those who needed help, and they needed help desperately. These men are hurting, and they call out to the Lord. Notice, it says in that verse, Jesus passed by. And I thought, I wonder how long that took. Now, there's no doubt we're going to find out these men cried out loudly. So their voice would travel a pretty good ways. But I promise you, it did not take long for Jesus to come inside that zone where he could hear their cry, and him leave that zone where he could hear their cry. In other words, that earshot, that zone, that time was not long. He passed by. He was keeping on going. That means if I'm going to get help, I'd better not wait. They knew if he gets out of earshot, we'll probably die blind. These men are hurting. These men need help. So they listen to what the verse says. Have mercy on us, O Lord, thou son of David. But it also says that they cried out. They cried. It literally means to scream. You know when the maniac of Gadara out in the tombs would scream in the night? And how when Jesus started talking to that man, the demons started speaking out of him. The same word is used of those voices that came out of that man for what these men and how they cried out. Same word. They screamed. They didn't care who heard. They wanted Jesus to hear. They didn't care what people thought. They cared about what Jesus thought. They didn't care who got upset. They needed help from God. And he was passing by, and they knew that window of opportunity would close quickly. That door of chance is going to close quickly. And they took advantage of the chance to get help from God. It'd do us well to realize we also have windows of opportunity. I believe there are times that Jesus passes by. I believe it happens on Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday night. He gives us a chance. And he says, I am here if you'll recognize it. And I am here to help if you'll know it. And I'm here to move if you'll turn to me and call on me and ask for mercy. Here's these men, even though they're blind, they sure see a whole lot better than a lot of other people. They know they need help, and they know the one that can help them is passing by, and they realize he ain't going to be around long. While he's here, I'm calling. While he's here, I'm asking. I'll say it again, it'll do us well to learn the same thing. There are times we have a window of opportunity to call on him for help. Peter sure did find that window when he was sinking. And you know what? It worked. And there's times that there's a window of opportunity as far as service. I want you to help me pray about this lady. I stopped by Burger King in Thomasville the other day. I was in a rush, and I felt myself getting skinny, so I knew I needed to get something to load myself up. And so I stopped at Burger King. To be honest, I was in a hurry. And it's like in my mind, I thought that lady's so busy, I'll just not bother her with a track. And it's like the Lord said, you give that woman a track. So I reached down and got a track and gave it to her, and I said this, I want you to invite. And she grabbed that track and threw it back at me. And she was already talking to the next customer, taking the order, and she rushed back into the restaurant. I thought, I want to try and go by and see if I can talk to her and ask that woman why she's so mad at God. But here's my point. She may have thrown the track back at me, but at least I didn't miss the opportunity to give it to her. At least try. And I wonder, could that have been her window of opportunity? Could that have been the last time God would have spoken to her? I have no idea. I don't know why she's so mad. I don't know why her attitude was, but it broke my heart. We have windows of service, windows of opportunities where it opens and closes quickly. He came by and kept on going, and the opportunity was gone. We need to take it. When he speaks to you, by the way, somebody asked me the other day for a phone number for somebody. And to my dismay, I said, well, they won't answer. And I thought after that, what a way to respond. And they said, well, the Lord's put my heart in that direction, and I believe I need to call. And I thought, man alive, of course. Why in the world say they won't answer? Maybe they will. Maybe they won't. But I thought, here's a person who has a window of opportunity, and they're making sure they don't miss it. There's a window of service. And it may have been that second that phone call came that could have been made the difference. Sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it does. But no matter what the result, what we're supposed to do, we're supposed to do it. He passed by. I sure didn't mean to stay there that long, but it's too late to back up now. They were desperate. Their one and only chance of sight may be walking away. I'd get desperate too. And notice what they asked for. They did not say first, oh, Son of David, Lord, Son of David, give us our sight. What they asked for was mercy. You know about mercy, right? If you're saved, you know about mercy. If you're alive today, you know about mercy. Mercy is for the helpless. Mercy is for the undeserving. Mercy is for the ones that can't help themselves. Mercy is for somebody who does not deserve it, cannot be any better, will get worse if God doesn't move. And that's what they call for. They call for mercy. They ask for mercy. They had nothing to offer Jesus. They had nothing to bargain with. They called on him for all that they could call him for was mercy. And I'm glad they found it. And boy, we need his mercy. They couldn't help themselves, and neither can we. I said again, mercy is help for the helpless and help for those who have no right to ask. And these men knew they were undeserving. And they called him Lord, the Son of David. They called him the Jewish name. They called him the name that the Jews called the Messiah. And that tracks back to David, where God said, a descendant of David will come and will be your king. We find that in several places. Psalm 132, Isaiah 9, Isaiah 11, Jeremiah 33. So they have been told, listen, they have been told at least a little bit about Jesus. And whatever they heard, they had believed, or they wouldn't have called out. So they call. So we mentioned first the men who were hurting. Let me deal a little bit with the multitude who were hindering. Look in verse 31. And the multitude rebuked them, the two blind men. They told them to hush because they should hold their peace. But they cried out the more, saying, have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David. The multitude all around say to these two men who are begging for help, needing help, desperate for help, pitiful shape, crying for help. And they say, will you please hush? Will you just shut your mouth? Here's the multitude who was hindering. Here's some people who were trying to hinder these two beggars from getting help. They're blind beggars. And I guess the multitude wanted them to stay that way. I do not understand that hardness. They rebuked these blind beggars and told them to be quiet. And I don't see how in the world anybody can be so hard. It's almost like they're glad they're blind and glad they're begging and glad they're in the shape they're in. I don't understand that hardness. But it's there. They're hindering these men, trying to hinder these men from getting help from the only one that can help them. Just quiet down, fellas. Just calm down. Quit hollering. Looks like they would have been glad if these men would have been healed. I mean, if nothing else, for selfish reasons. The next time they walk by that spot that they tried to quieten down and make sure that these two beggars didn't hear them, next time they wouldn't be there. Wouldn't be bothered with these beggars. If anything, for selfish reasons, it looks like this crowd, these people would want these men to get help, get healed, but they must not have cared enough. They cry out for them to be quiet. Maybe it's not a reason, but maybe it's an excuse or an explanation. Maybe they've just gotten so used to so many blind people, these two didn't mean a thing. I'll say it again. In that area, there's a lot of blind people because they thought maybe they could get help if they could come to that area and around Jericho. So maybe the crowd had gotten so used to the blindness and so used to the beggars and so used to people in this condition that they did just got used to it. They got callous to the misery. And that's why they just said, "Will you just be quiet?" They may have gotten embarrassed. There's some people get embarrassed about loudness, about the things of God. Get embarrassed about somebody shouting amen or hollering in the Lord, I mean. You understand that? Some people just want to quieten everything down and be quiet before God. And there's a time for that, but there's a time just to scream your eyeballs out too and shout yourself to halfway to glory. Here's these men needing help. And maybe they got embarrassed, and that's why they said, "Just will you just be quiet?" But I do know this. These men were so burdened, so needy, and so desperate. That crowd didn't affect them. In fact, you look at it, it says they cried out the more. You cried out the more and say the same thing, "Have mercy on us." Even crowd louder instead of getting silence. It'd do us well to have that attitude. Because I promise you, the world doesn't want you to serve God. That person at work, they're not real happy about how you live. That person you talk to and try to witness to, they're not always excited to hear your little story. They would love for you to quieten down, but it's not time to quieten down. It's time to, if you will, cry aloud. It's time to speak out. So we need to realize, we need to make sure that nobody, listen, nobody hinders us from doing God's will. And surely nobody hinders us from getting help from God. That's what these men are needing. And then we see, beginning in verse 32, the Messiah who was hearing. The men who were hurting and the multitude who was hindering and the Messiah who was hearing. I'm glad the Messiah came by, listen, on the way to the cross, still listening for hurting hearts. Whew. What a blessing that is. Look in verse 32. And Jesus stood still. I may have to work on that a little bit. Man, that's a good message. God stood still. What a blessing. Their cry stopped God. And you do remember he's going to a very important appointment. He's heading to the cross, but he stops abruptly, instantly when he heard their cry. Messiah, who is hearing, he hears the cry of someone in need. The God of the heavens stopped because two souls needed help. Desperate faith will do that. They were desperate, but they believed. Those two things, that combination, get the attention of God. I'll say it again. He was on his final trip to Jerusalem and heading toward the cross, but he still had time to stop to hear the cry and meet the need of two men who needed him desperately. He cared that much. Even though there were many like those two, these two are the only call that called out, and just two was enough for him to stop. I mean, it wasn't 100, it wasn't 50, it was two. That tells me, and maybe that's one reason why Matthew mentions only one, because just one, that's all it takes for to get the attention of God. They cried out, and he stopped, and he heard, and he listened, even though he himself was about to suffer. Listen, he's demonstrating what he taught back in verse 26 because he said there, if you want to be the chief, you serve. And here's God heading to the cross, and he's still serving. So he's demonstrating by example what he's taught. I'll say this, and I have already. It's easy to condemn the crowd. But I wonder how we would have reacted. I wonder how we would have responded to, hey, listen, this crowd, they're moving toward Jerusalem. And they believe he's about to come into Jerusalem, set up his kingdom, overthrow Rome, and our life is about to change to the better. They don't want anything hindering that. Why are you stopping for these beggars? Come on, let's go. Well, that could explain it, but it surely doesn't get them off the hook. It's still dirty and rotten that they try and get these two men to hush. But I do understand if that's the reason. I'll say it again. There's sure a good chance they just calloused and didn't care. But I know this. Jesus had compassion. He felt their pain. He stopped. And then he moved. And he worked because he felt their pain. He put himself in their place. And that's what he does with us. Do you understand when you're hurting, it makes him hurt? You ever had a child get hurt? You ever had an older child get her heart broken or his heart broken and they're weeping and they're broken and you can't fix it, but you hurt because they're hurting because you love them? Hey, that's how God is. He not only knows about our hurt, he feels our hurt. He hurts with us. And he's hurting with these men. He stops. And Mark tells us that the crowd spoke to the blind men, somebody in the crowd, and said this, "Be of good comfort, rise, he calleth thee." And Jesus heard their cries, stopped, and asked, "What will ye that I shall do unto you?" And when he stopped, somebody in the crowd saw it. And when he said, "What do you want from me?" Boy, what a question from God. What do you want from me? What is it you're asking? And someone in the crowd, hey, listen, there's a bunch of people around. Jesus could be talking to anybody. These two blind men don't know he's talking to them because they can't see his lips moving. They can't see where he's looking or who he's looking at. And someone in the crowd say, "He's talking to you. He's talking to you. And he bids you rise and come to him." Well, there was a couple in the crowd, or at least one in the crowd, that did a little bit of good that day. And Jesus said, "What will ye that I shall do unto you?" Well, I just want to say, what a strange question. I would not have even had to ask that question. And I'm sort of dumb. I sure am glad nobody said amen right there. I don't often not want you to say amen, but that was one of those often times, or those lack of often times. I'm glad you stayed quiet. I know you thought it, but I'm glad you just didn't say it. I mean, I have sense enough to know the answer to this question. I have sense enough that I wouldn't have had to ask the question. I know these men are blind. They want to see. But Jesus asked them, "What would you have me do for you?" What a question for God to ask you. Do you know he could answer any request? Now, I know he would not have, but in this day they could ask, "Well, I really would like to have a white Rolls Royce. I sure would like to have a mansion on a hill." He asked them this question to force them to admit their need, that we might receive our sight. That's what it says in verse 33. They say unto him, "Lord, that our eyes may be open." The God who can give you anything on earth asks you, "What do you want from me?" Wonder what you'd say. I'm afraid we'd ask for wealth or happiness or health, but they asked for what they needed most, sight. And they said, "Lord, that our eyes may be open." They put their finger on their problem. "I can't see, and I can't do a thing in the world about the fact that I can't see." I said, "You wonder if we would ask for the same thing. I wonder, do you discern enough about your issues and your needs to where you would know what to request and what to ask for. If God came by and say, whatever your need is, whatever request you have, just ask me and I'll grant it. Do we know enough about ourselves to know what to even ask for? You see, it's easy for us to look at others and see their faults, their needs, their issues. Sometimes we get far-sighted when it's looking at ourselves. These men knew what they need. They didn't know how to do. They didn't understand that. They may have been blind, but they weren't spiritually blind in the fact that they didn't know their need. They simply asked for what they needed. They did not dress up their request. Oh, thou Son of God, we are pleasured with your presence here. We are so humbled by your... No. They just said, will you please open our eyes? They didn't try and dress up their request. Their words were simple and to the point. They spoke to him exactly what they needed. It'd do us well to know we don't have to pray fancy prayer. Peter said, Lord, save me. You know what? It worked. Jesus put out his hand, stopped him from sinking, took him to the boat. Our prayers don't need to be fancy. They don't need to be dressed up. They don't need formal. Just tell them what you want, what you need. Just ask them. Well, we've looked at the men who were hurting and the multitude who were hindering and the Messiah who was hearing. Let's look at this last thing. The ministers who were helping. And that may sound a little bit strange, but look at verse 34. So Jesus had compassion on them and touched their eyes, and immediately their eyes received sight, and they followed him. Those who were sightless are now seeing, but they're not just seeing for themselves, they're seeing for the Savior. They followed him. They went to serving him. Those who needed ministering to are now ministering to others. Those who needed help are now helping others. The ministers who are helping. These two men who were blind now are sighted and ministering and helping others. I don't know what they did, but I know this. They did more after they could see than before they could see. And they were following Jesus doing it. And that's a pretty good way to go. They were ministering to others. They were serving the Lord. They were making themselves available to him. They followed Jesus, ministering and helping to others in some capacity. He touched their eyes and instantly they could see. I thought about this. As far as we know, now we don't know if they'd been blind 2 years, 10 years, or since birth. We don't know. But I'll just assume they were blind their entire life. First thing they saw was the face of Jesus. That ain't a bad way to start your life or sight, I'll tell you that. If they had been able to see and they lost their sight, then the first new thing they saw was the face of the Savior. That ain't a bad way to start. He says, he's teaching here that he had compassion. Many, I'll say it again and I'm going to close. Many had gotten used to these people. They got used to the begging, used to their blindness, used to their being there, but these two men had not gotten used to it. And the first chance they had for real help, they cried out. Boy, I'll tell you one thing. They begged the people for money and food, but they begged to God for sight a whole lot more fervently. He touched them. And their pain went away. He saw what they were missing. I'll say it, I'll assume they had always been blind. They'd never seen a sunrise, never seen a flower, didn't know what mama looked like, didn't know what daddy looked like. Jesus saw that pain. He saw their anguish. He saw where they were at. He saw what they needed. And he was moved by their hurt. He was moved by their pain. I'll say this, and maybe I'll quit this time. We're never told about the other man as far as his name. All we know is he was blind and begging. He got healed and followed Jesus. You know, there's a whole lot of unnamed people in this world right now serving God. You may feel like one of them. You get passed over when recognition gets handed out. You don't have a name that gets recognized. You don't have a position that gets attention. You don't get a lot of pat on the back. Say, listen, you just keep walking with God. Just keep serving Him. He's keeping up with it. And I promise you, it'll be all right when we see Him. Luke 18:43 says that when all this happened, that the people praised God. Some in that crowd that had not believed start believing. Isn't that a wonderful blessing? Matthew doesn't record it, but about this time, somewhere around Jericho, there's a little man climbing up a tree named Zacchaeus, and Jesus helps him before he moves on toward the cross. Well, I'll stop here.